This conference will now be recorded.
Okay, I would like to call to order this meeting of the Human Resources and Governance Committee. Mike, I think you know this, but just in case you don't, with Karen Jarmok's departure from the board, our chairman, Tony, asked Mary Ellen to, I believe it's correct to say Mary Ellen, come back to this committee. You were on it once, weren't you? When you
I
were,
was,
when,
yeah.
When you were the chair, yeah.
Right, done everything about once, I think, so far.
So it's the four of us. We are the committee as currently constituted. The only business on the agenda today is a discussion of a personnel matter. And for that purpose, we would need to go into executive session. And I would like a motion, please, to go into executive session for that purpose.
Bob, there's actually two items on the agenda. We first have a discussion item regarding employee compensation and benefits, and then we have an executive session item.
Okay, great. I'm sorry. I'll turn it over to you, Kevin, to lead the discussion on the first item.
Sure. As you know, typically this time of year, we always have a Human Resources Committee meeting to talk about employee compensation. As you know, the budget was approved by the board at the last board meeting. The budget actually included 6.5% salary increase across the board. As you know, the unions are currently negotiating with the state. We're not exactly sure when those negotiations are going to conclude, but just recently it was announced by the state that they have plugged in a 2% increase for non-unionized employees. It remains to be seen what's going to happen with the unionized employees, but they have also talked about what they're referring to as a compression analysis. One of the concerns on a state level is that for many years, the unions have gotten increases, but managerial employees haven't. And those salary ranges are now starting to compress on one another. So while they've announced a 2% increase, I think they realize they're going to have to do something else as it relates to the unclassified on the state side to deal with that compression. Here, as you know, we've tried to keep pace with the unions. We've made it a practice that the unclassified folks here have always gotten what the unions get in terms of salary increases. Probably the first exception to that was last year. As you know, our unionized staff received a pay increase last year, but the unclassified employees did not as a result of the pandemic. So certainly as we, you know, talk about, you know, the salary increase for this coming fiscal year, which would be effective July 1st. I'm trying to keep that in mind as we try to address what we're doing with the unclassified folks. I think the other element that's important to understand, because it's been the subject of a lot of discussion among our unclassified employees here, is that beginning January 1st this year, the state has imposed a 0.5% deduction on unclassified salaries here to pay for the paid family leave program in the state. Okay, that's something that does stick in the craw of unclassified folks here for a couple of reasons. Number one, the fact that the unclassifieds have to pay that 0.5%, but the unionized employees do not. And the other issue that's associated with that, you know, our unclassified folks here realize that it's highly unlikely they'll ever benefit from that program because of the time off that the unclassified employees have that they would first have to utilize before they could take advantage of this paid family leave. It would be an extraordinary circumstance that someone would actually benefit from the program. The other item, you know, that I think folks in general are starting to talk about quite a bit is the inflation rate. As you know, the inflation rate as it came in last month was about 4%. So those are the things that, you know, we've been kicking around as the senior staff here as to how do we address some of these issues and stay and still try to stay, you know, in step, you know, with what I think the expectation of the legislature is and certainly what we would hear from the governor's office. So long way of saying what I'd like to recommend is that we move forward with a 4% increase for the unclassified staff. In a perfect world, I'd actually look to go a little bit higher in recognition of all of those factors that I talked about. But why, you know, we've kind of settled on 4% is if you look at some of the legislation that's being proposed, you know, that would deal with quasi-public agency and transparency within quasi-public agencies, the trigger in a lot of that legislation, which we don't know is going to pass, it may or it may not pass, we hope it's not going to pass, but the trigger in that legislation is that the legislature would have to be notified if someone's being given a salary increase of 5% or more, right? So we've kind of set that as that would be the outside number. So that's why we really settled on the 4%. Didn't really want to play the game and go right to the 5 or the 4.5, right? So we settled on 4%. So what we really would like is to get the concurrence. We're not asking for a vote because essentially 6.5% already been approved by the board. But we do like to get the concurrence of the Human Resources Committee that you're on board with our thinking.
Well, I'm certainly supportive of it, and I just want to add to that statement that, Kevin, we've worked together for many years now, all of us, Tony being the newest comer to the group, and on compensation issues, you have always been very moderate and reasonable and presented a well-thought-through recommendation. So, as always, I'm very comfortable with your analysis and your recommendation.
I am as well, and I did see, whether it was a week or two ago in the Current, the article about this whole compression issue and how that's really kind of gotten away from folks. So yeah, my opinion, what you recommend is the right thing to do.
I have a question. excuse me. I'm just wondering what would be the effect of an approval by this group or a recommendation of increases not to exceed 4.5%, leaving a little room if things change in the next 60 to 90 days that indicate, well, maybe that would be more appropriate. I don't know. I hate to have to come back again, but then again, I don't want to put a target out there that gives unreasonable expectations. So I don't know, I just throw that on the table.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I should have mentioned is each year when we, you know, grant these increases, naturally we go through a performance review process, right? So there are varying levels of performance. So it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody's going to get 4%. If the performance is substandard, you may not get anything, or you may get 2%, you know, with a recommendation for improvement. But in some cases, you know, we do take a look at where people are within the ranges, right? Because each position here has a salary range. And we're also trying to move people along in that range to keep them invested. You know, one of the things, and it might have been in that article you're referencing, Mary Ellen, in 2022, there's going to be a major turnover of the workforce here in the state because it's tied to different retirement system changes. We are going to experience that as well. So we want to make sure that, you know, particularly some of our younger employees or people that are lower in the range continue to stay invested as we're going to be asking them to do more. So I think that would actually be beneficial, quite frankly, if this was voted that, you know, salary increases not exceeding 4.5, with the understanding that we're going to be going through that exercise. In some cases, in the past, where you know, we've had this conversation with the board and we settled on a particular number in the past. A lot has centered around 3 or 3.5%. Some cases we've given people 5 in recognition of what I just explained. So I do think that is helpful as you look at kind of the pool of money that we're working with.
Devin, help me understand a couple of things. First of all, how many people are involved, approximately, ballpark?
Of 30.
Okay. So is there, have you, and I imagine you have, given some consideration to the fact that our income has been down dramatically? And I mean, in most small businesses, there were salary cuts, not salary increases. And how do we explain that away, or if should we be asked about it?
Yeah, I think you know, we're trying to tie this to some of the recovery that we're experiencing, as well as, you know, the additions of airline routes and new airlines coming on board. I mean, truth be told, financially, we're in a very good position right now. A lot of that, though, related to the fact that we've gotten substantial levels of federal assistance. So, yeah, we do have to be careful how that's perceived, right? That you got federal assistance coming through the door, but yet we're granting salary increases. But, you know, what we've looked at over the past year is the substantial pickup of work that all of these employees have had to do. I mean, if you look at our approved budgeted positions, at one point, it was 170 plus employees. I think during the pandemic, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, we got down to 149 employees were kind of picking up all of this work. I think also, you know, what we're hearing and seeing is that our concessionaires, for example, are having to pay a premium to get employees to come to work, right? So I would disagree somewhat that, you know, in the private sector that there are salary cutbacks. I think in some cases, employers are finding they actually have to pay more to be able to recruit folks. Now, admittedly, you know, those are typically hourly workers that we're speaking about, not salary workers. But I think, you know, you put all of that together, I think there's good justification for why we're doing what we're doing.
So have you calculated the impact this has on benefits?
Well, the just to give you the empirical dollar amount, at 4%, that would equate roughly to $205,000, right? Now, in terms of benefits, yes. I mean, every time you increase the salary level, because the benefits are based upon a percentage of base salary, those benefit costs go up as well. And as you know, the big driver of that is the retirement system. If you use numbers that are generally good for this group, because this is non-public safety employees, that benefit level is 96% of base salary. So theoretically, your total compensation is then 205,000 plus 96% of that, right? So roughly 300,000 for argument's sake, or no, roughly 400,000 for argument's sake.
We're sending you back to school for math.
Yeah, there you go. That's why I'm in the airport business.
Me too.
And Kevin, to the point about the pension change that's going to probably trigger a lot of people to leave next year, do we have any sense of how that might affect us? I mean, I know
we've gone through a complete analysis of all of the positions that we have here in the organization. Granted, you have to make some assumptions, right? Because you never really know what somebody's unique financial situation is, that even though on its face it may make sense for them to leave, financially they just can't do it. in some cases, employees have been very upfront. We've been careful how we've approached it, but for example, with the senior staff, we have asked each one of our senior staff members, you know, what their intentions are as it relates to that. You know, for this room only, for example, Paul is going to be leaving. Makes all the sense of the world for him to leave. There's a high likelihood Bob Bruno will leave. So you have some key folks that, you know, potentially could walk out the door. I don't know if you're that familiar, but Mark Holland, for example, another person in our engineering department, will be leaving as well, have already announced their intentions. Other folks like Barry Plank, for example, who is takes care of the operations at the GA airports, it makes sense for him to leave, but he has not indicated one way or the other if he's intending to leave. So in those situations, you know, we just have to make our best guess. What we are planning to do in critical positions, we're going to start the hiring process 6 months in advance of the date they're expected to go. In the case of Paul, for example, we know it's going to take us a while for that recruitment. So we're probably going to start the recruitment for the general counsel sometime in the summer. Same thing would occur with Bob Bruno if we, you know, get that definitive answer from Bob. Right now, looks like he's leaning more towards leaving, but he hasn't made that final commitment yet at this point. But those are jobs that we have deemed critical. Other positions that are less critical, yeah, we'll probably start the recruitment about 3 months in advance. The magic date for all of these folks is April 1st, because if they leave after April 1st, even though these changes to the retirement don't kick in until July 1st, right? So if you leave before July 1st, you're still entitled to everything you were entitled to under a retirement system. But if you leave by April 1st, the COLA that you're entitled to, the cost of living increase under the retirement, kicks in that first year. So you'd be very foolish to stay for the other 3 months and miss the cost of living increase that now has an impact on your pension for the rest of your life. So we know that's the date we're targeting. We do have the flexibility of, you know, they're called 120-day employees. Anyone who retires can be rehired for a maximum of 120 days following retirement. So we'll probably make use of that, you know, in positions like Bob's or positions like Paul, that even though they may retire by April 1st, depending on where we are with the recruitment, we'll still bring them back for the 120 days to have a transition period to make sure we don't lose any of the corporate knowledge, so to speak.
Okay.
And that's why, you know, as I said, when we talk about, you know, some of our younger employees that are seeing, wait a minute, I'm going to be picking up extra work here, this, that, and the other thing. We want to make sure we're not only not dealing with just the retirees, but that we're starting to lose some of our younger folks as well, or people that don't have as much tenure in the retirement system.
Okay, well, as Kevin said at the outset, this was to be a discussion both to inform the committee members and to obtain all of our views as to the approach, reasonableness, and Mike has suggested a good addition to the concept, which Kevin supported. So I think it's been a very useful conversation. We don't have to take any formal action. We've been briefed. We've given Kevin our feedback, which is supportive and positive. Does anyone have anything else on this topic that you would like to go back to, or should we move on to the next part of the agenda?
Good.
Move on.
Okay, so we are now ready for a motion to go into an executive session, correct, Kevin?
Yes.
And so moved.
Second.
Okay, so everyone's in favor, I know. We are ready to go into executive session.
Okay, for this conversation, I'm going to ask the rest of the staff if they could leave the room.
Okay. I'm going to take it off.
This conference will now be recorded.
All right, we have completed our discussion in executive session. No decisions or actions taken. So I think at this point, we've completed the agenda for today's meeting, and I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
I'll make the motion. Oh, too late.
I'm quick today, Mike.
I think
you are, boy, I'll tell you.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay, we stand adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Okay, good to see you guys.
Thank you.
Bye. Have a good day.
Thanks.